Okay, we have here with us Mitchell Sudeck. Sudeck?
Sudeck.
You want to say your name?
Mitchell Sudeck.
Okay, where were you born?
Coney Island, New York.
And when?
1951.
What
January
day?
6th.
January 6th, 1951. And what is your permanent address?
1675 York Avenue, New York, New York, 10128.
Alright, almost this after midnight, so it's the 1st of September, 1988, and I'm doing this book, and it's called Attic, and on one side we'll have your photograph, the one we just took, and on the other side we'll have a page, maybe more pages, I'm not sure. I'm going to do more than one page. I'd like to just do one page because a lot of people talk for 45 minutes and stuff. I don't know what I'm doing. But on that page, it's like you, and you can say whatever you want. And like your childhood, the important things to you, bizarre things that happened to you, pain, why maybe you're an addict, and your spiritual path today, and basically something that you think is real important about you, and maybe other addicts might be able to identify and see that there is hope for people, just normal people reading this book, because this is just a normal book, and they see that their addicts staying clean, because everybody in the book is clean for 3 days, 18 years, and everybody has a different story, but it's all like a reflection of us. Mm-hmm. So basically, your page, whatever you want to say or do with it. And I'm just going to take stuff off the tape, edit it, make it more condensed and pure. So don't worry about saying anything about the fellowship or anything, because I can delete that. And a lot of people are like, oh, we're all stuck because they can't say anything about the fellowship, so they don't say anything. Just let it flow out, and don't worry about what's on the tape.
Okay, well, I'm not sure how.
You can just start with your childhood on Coney Island.
Well, I was born in Coney Island. Okay. Well, I only lived there for a couple of months. Then we moved to a place.
Try to speak up a little bit.
In Queens, Howard Beach. And I remember growing up being a very lonely period. You know, it was very much a lot of stuff going on in my head and never anybody to share it with. And being afraid to share it with people. You're full of a lot of fear. Fear of anything from darkness to conversations with people, and always had this committee going on in my head that I never understood, you know, I never knew what to do with it.
Well, basically,
it was all about the feelings, you know, I never knew what to do with feelings. So I learned very early to stuff them. It was really easy for me to get attention, you know, as a child. I would act out, I would be the devil's advocate, I would do some kind of a prank, and I'd get attention to my family, and it would be a way that I used through my, you know, childhood and through my adolescence to get people to like me. You know, it was like, I always felt like the outsider, and always wanted to belong to somebody, to some crowd, to be part of something. But I never really felt part of anything. I always felt very much different from everybody. And I had two sisters, an older sister and a younger sister, and I recall my early days, I was very close with my younger sister. I was able to use her as like a partner in crime kind of thing. And I used to do a lot of pranks with her, and was able to hope somehow to get her to take the blame for them. And that was always, it was something about getting over in life, getting, you know, getting something done and not being able to get, you know, not being caught for it. And that was a real important attitude that I had as a kid. It was like, what can I get away with? What can I take from life and not be responsible for? You know, I mean, just little incidents when, the typical behavior was, I'd be sitting in the car with my sister, and maybe I was 5 years old, and she was 3 years old, or six and four, something like that, and I pulled the cigarette lighter out of the car and, you know, touch it with my hand, and then I'd push it in and get it nice and hot, and I'd ask my sister to do it. You know, things like that that were kind of mean, you know, now that I look back at them, and I thought they were just having fun. You know, it's like I always wanted to have fun and never be responsible for any of the fun that I had. And, a lot of my childhood was those kind of pranks, writing on the wall with crayons and making a joke about it and not getting caught. And I don't know, it was a lonely childhood then. You know, I really felt afraid of things. You know, one incident, I remember coming down to Florida. My family used to go down to Florida on a regular basis. And we had this family down there that we'd visit, and there would be this one person that was had cerebral palsy, and he was in a wheelchair, and he had an enlarged head, and this scared the shit out of me. I was so afraid of this person. I remember when he would be wheeled into the room, I'd have to run and hide. And that, you know, these kind of things were, to me, I felt they were not normal. You know, I thought everybody should be able to handle these things. I couldn't handle life. You know, life was just too overwhelming for me. So I looked to escape, you know, and I escaped in early childhood from, you know, with this committee going on in my head and being able to basically live a life of my own, you know, within, and not really share it with anybody. And, you know, something happened when I started to go to school and have peer groups and things like that. And there was the days that we started to drink. You know, the pints of wine behind the school kind of scene, and it was like, I hated this stuff. You know, I didn't like the taste of it, but somehow I wanted to belong to the group of guys, and this is what they did, so I did it. But there was something else I got out of it. You know, there was a moment of peace of mind, so-called peace of mind, that I got out of using that early on, that I realized that it was a great place to hide from the world. And through high school, you know, there was the experimentation with all the different drugs and you know, I never really thought I would ever become an addict. You know, consciously, I don't think I ever thought about it, but somehow, you know, it had this intelligence factor that always said, you know, you're too smart, you can always figure things out. You know, it was always about the result. I was really good in school, but I didn't work at all. You know, it was never studying or never the path. It was always, how do I get good grades? And that's what I did. I got good grades. I cheated. I stole tests. You know, I was the captain of the math team, I remember. And we had this big competition. And I remember stealing the answers from the team. And that was the kind of academics that I did. It was again, that attitude of how can I get over on the world and not get caught and look like a hero kind of thing. And then people would like me. But the thing is, I always felt like shit about myself. You know, it was always you paid the price no matter what you did. And it didn't matter that nobody ever caught me or nobody punished me for things. It was like I did, you know, the damage to myself. And that was like a self-imprisonment. And then it was the 60s and the hippie times, and it was really, that was my glory. You know, those were the times that I really loved, being up in Woodstock and experiencing free love and peace and happiness and drugs. You know, it was like the drugs were great then. You know, I enjoyed those experiences. They were enlightening. There was the acid days and the mind-expanding days. And university was like that. It was all about demonstrating and I don't know, somehow it all felt right then. But some experiences happened at that time that kind of turned it all around. I had this one thing where I was busted for some drugs, and there was a whole scene, and I had to turn to my father, who at the time I was trying to push away and break away from, you know, to be on my own. You know, it was like this desire to be on my own, stand on my own, to make money on my own, to be able to support myself. So I did that by dealing drugs for a while, and I got caught, and I was scared, and I turned to my dad, and he bailed me out of jail, and it was this whole big thing, and I was really worried and everything like that, and everybody was talking about pinning it on me, and I got this whole this big paranoia and everything, and I called my dad, And he said everything would be all right. He'll help me out. He'll take care of it. You know, not to worry. And it was like 2 days after I got out of jail from that bus. And that night, it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and about 6 o'clock that morning, he died of a heart attack. And that was 1972. And that was the turning point of my drug use. From that point on, the drugs were no longer fun. Life was no longer fun. Life was a lot of pain. Living with this guilt, I felt like I killed my dad. You know, I had this tremendous thing of why I'm alive. Why am I alive? And he's dead. And the only way I could live with that was to not feel. So I used. And I just continued to use drugs to wash away all these feelings. And feelings hurt. You know, I was always like this desire to be happy, this desire to enjoy. Enjoy life. That was always the motto for my life. People laughing seemed to have a good time, so I thought that's what you had to do, was laugh. But I had a hard time laughing from that point on. And the only time I really thought I was enjoying myself was when I was unconscious. So I spent a lot of years being partially unconscious. You know, I thought there were a lot of ways to find happiness. You know, I thought that if you had money, then you'd be happy. So I pursued money. And I made that a goal to be happy. And I acquired money, and it didn't work. I thought that maybe if you got married and had a wife and tried to have a family kind of situation, that would work. I tried that. That didn't work either. You know, I tried a lot of different things to get something, you know, some inner peace again. You know, it was like I tried to recapture those days when I first started using it. I felt so free. And life was just like one day at a time kind of an attitude. And what can I do today to enjoy myself? But it was always, you know, like this thing of taking. You know, it was never really what can I give. It was always, what can I take? So it was like, how do I get back on that path? Well, somebody suggested trying therapy. So I went into therapy. And I figured that might be an interesting project. So I learned how to talk to a therapist. I learned to use the correct jargon. And I learned to use the right words to get him off my back. And it was a 5-year experience of spending a lot of money on thinking that I'm going to help myself, but again, it was fooling myself. You know, it was really the drugs is all I really wanted, and that's all I craved for. I just wanted to be in a state where I didn't feel anything, and everything else I did was really to camouflage this to everybody else in the world. Well, I'll try going into a rehab, or I'll try stopping this way, or I'll just lie about it. And I remember being in group therapy, and we would march into the bathroom, and we would throw the drugs down the toilet, and everybody would clap and say, Mitchell's not going to use anymore. But I was just fooling them. You know, it was like I wasn't honest with myself. And somehow, all these experiences of fooling myself and really not being honest with myself and not dealing with reality. The reality was my life was totally unmanageable and I couldn't stop using. So I had to hit a bottom, you know, and it came when I had a girlfriend at the time and she attempted suicide, and again I went into another rehab to try to clean up. And something happened when I was in this rehab. I don't know if you want to call it a spiritual awakening or it was just my time. I believe it was my time. You know, I believe I had enough. I think I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And there was a way. You know, in this rehab, there was these meetings that came in every night. And I saw people that were addicts like me. They spoke like me. I understood them. I understood what they were talking about, but they said they weren't using. And this became a way out for me. It was like a door that I never saw before. And it kind of changed my whole life. It's been about 4.5 years now since I haven't used anything. And it's about, you know, a whole new way of attitudes towards life. It's like new attitudes towards the world. I no longer believe that I'm the center of the world. You know, I always thought that I had to be the center of everything that went on. I believed that everything around me was either happening to me or for me. And somehow I don't believe that anymore. I think I'm more of a part of something much greater. And this was a relief. This was really, it really was a relief when I found this out. It's almost like a rebirth. A rebirth, learning that there's another way. Learning that there's a possibility to live a life, a loving life, or a giving life, and getting something from that. You know, I always thought that I enjoyed things because they were given to me, and all of a sudden it became, what can I do? And this was a whole new concept for me. It was revolutionary. You know, I never believed that that was something that I was capable of. And somehow the path kind of turned around at that point. And I believe that today my path is on that line towards, how can I be a giving human being? What can I do today for somebody else? And these 4.5 years have been the most exciting years of my life. I've experienced freedom to travel, which I had never thought I would be able to travel. I've experienced people. You know, it was the last 5 years of my using was not much contact with the outside world. There were not too many people that I let inside, you know, and knew what was going on inside me. But today, it's like my life is rich because of the people that I'm involved with. And I believe that, you know, I guess at this point here you'll edit it, I believe it's because of Narcotics Anonymous. I truly love that feeling of having something that I really believe in and stand for. You know, and it's not that perfect all the time. You know, it's like I can be easy on myself and say that I'm on a road or a path towards something that's to be a better person, to be somebody that's there for other people. But it's not always perfect, and that's okay too. You know, it's something. It's like an exciting adventure. You know, each day is like, what can happen today? You know, and it's all not that important anymore. You know, the daily problems in life are really not that big. You know, it's. I don't know. I feel like I'm getting mushy about it now. And sometimes I do. You know, it's like I fall into this. Getting to be like a wimp. And you're getting to be real mushy and lovey and everything like that. But somehow those are the things that make me feel good inside. You know, the things that when I can take away my ego and my image and my pride and the things that really block me and keep me from other people. You know, these walls that I put up that I don't allow people to see who I really am and see who they really are and to just to be. Just be able to be in the moment. You know, it was something that I always believed while I was using that tomorrow would be better. And somehow, through the times that I've been clean, I believe that each day, the moment, is what really counts. It's no longer, well, when this happens, I'll be fine. Or if I have this outside thing, you know, to fill this inside hole in me, I'll be okay. You know, it's learning to nurture my inside and learning to be vulnerable, to take risks. Something I never did. You know, there was always, well, it was like a con. I'll do this, but I gotta get something in return for it. And, you know, those are the times that I sell myself short. know, and the times that I feel really at peace with the world is when I'm not asking for anything. And I have experienced that feeling in the last 4.5 years. And this is something I believe is worth living for. You know, it was like a self-imposed imprisonment that I had. You know, I don't think anybody could have done to me what I did to myself those years that I was using. I really believe that the hell that I created for myself was, there would be no jail and no physical situation that could have been more devastating. And today I'm learning to let go of those things. To be easier on myself, to be gentle with myself, to be gentle with other people. And, you know, it's like, I can say these things, but to use them on a daily basis takes vigilance, takes discipline, takes consistency. Things I'm learning about today. And, you know, it's like, I don't think I have to be perfect. I really believe today that I don't have to be perfect. You know, each day that I stay clean, I can pat myself on them. You know, it was the early days of when I was clean, it was so easy to feel good just because I was not using drugs. And somehow, as time progresses and I feel that I put more conditions on, you know, what needs to be right for me to feel good, it gets a little more complicated. And I think that the times that I simplify it, I remember where I came from and where I'm going now, it's all too good. You know, it's all too good. I don't know where else to go.
Wonderful. Good ending, huh? You done?
Hmm?